just doesn't feel right, little crows. The last two episodes left a hole in my heart. I still feel sad. And the reality is, I don't think I can do the final part of this show about 2057 without one more mention of Big D. So here is one last remembrance from my Omai who used to go by the name of Shades. He's going to spin a yarn about where he was that day.
2057? Day that Dunkelson died? Dunkelson died. Even after all these years, I still can't get his fraggy name right. Well, that's what happens when you have a name that doesn't have too many consonants, not enough vowels. That's dragons for you. Anyway, normally, I tell anyone to eat, drink, and die for asking a question like that because I don't talk about personal biz. Personal OPSEC, operational security for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, you should. Anyway, OPSEC's kept me alive for a long time, and I don't plan on changing anytime soon. Still, that was a long time ago, almost another lifetime. Hell, there's no one really alive anymore who could use this bit of payday against me. Well, that and because I know you wouldn't try to bribe me with cheap bourbon, Opti. Thanks for the bottle, by the way. So for that, I'll go on record just this once. I actually was in D.C. that night, or rather, the other side of the Potomac. While just about everybody else was at Watergate for the Big D's, I think that's a little safer to talk, say, for his inaugural shindig, I was in the FDC visiting family at Arlington National Cemetery. My grandfather, ghost rest his soul, was a legend in the U.S. Army, you see. Yeah, you heard that right. He fought in the Ghost Dance War and stayed in long enough to see the formation of the UCAS. Died in his 90s, August 9, as a matter of fact, and was buried with full military honors. See, I come from what some may call a rather impressive military pedigree. Most of my family served either in the UCAS or in the United States Armed Forces, going all the way back to World War I. Not for an unfortunate accident in my teens, I'd likely signed up as well. Instead, I was forced to go Merc. Still, done a lot of work for the UCAS in my time, so guess it makes up for it. Despite my current occupation, I, like the rest of my family, take words like honor, duty, loyalty very, very seriously. I know in the shadows, words like that are usually punchlines. But say it around me sometime, see what happens. I may be a heartless, soulless merc. But I can say one thing, my honor's still intact, even after all these years in the shadows. Now, anyway, that year I made my yearly pilgrimage to Arlington to visit my grandfather's grave. Say what you will about politics, nationalism, military service, and whatever, but every time I go there, I feel like I'm on sacred ground. And even before my adept abilities kicked in when I was a kid, I still feel a certain something every time I went there. Anyway, there I was, standing before Grandpa's grave, thinking about how I kicked my ass growing up while my father was deployed. I learned a lot from the old soldier. Lessons have saved my hoop to this very day. One of those lessons, always be aware of your surroundings. Well, saved my life that day too. You see, back in those days, there was a certain corporation who had a bounty on my head along with a bunch of other members of my former unit over a little misunderstanding outside of a small city called Kempachi. Not sure where or what it is? Well, look it up. Now, normally, I'm one of the most OPSEC-conscious SOBs on the planet, but no one's perfect. And it seems a local Johnson for said corp found out about my little nightly visit and arranged for some local muscle to try and collect on my sorry backside. They were good. Got real close before I noticed them. Five of them in total. Guess I should have been flattered. Johnson needing to send that many for just little old me. But in reality, I was slotted beyond belief. In my mind, they were violating both my personal, but more important, cemetery sanctity. Like I said, they were good, but all the light stepping in the world goes right out the window if you use too much fracking gun oil in your weapons. Smelt them before I saw them. Well, it didn't take much before the fight was on. They almost had me boxed in real good with an overlapping crossfire. But they didn't realize how fast I was, even back then. Before they could take their safeties off, I took one of them down with a double tap to the head with my old manhunter. The rest of the crew flinched, and I bolted. But they quickly regained their senses and tried to take me down with suppression fire. I knew 4-1 odds against an assortment of SMGs with my manhunter and the room sweeper under my arm was a losing proposition. It was time to go. Hell, felt like direct for doing it, but those rows of headstones make for decent cover as I dodge between them. Parked just enough between each other, with just enough space to maneuver. Well, they got close more than a few times, but thankfully good solid concrete saved my hide more than a few times. Still didn't stop one chromed up orc Sammy from getting within literal spitting distance of me. But it's hard to pursue when your throat is shut. But what can I say? It's kind of hard to pursue your quarry when said quarry decides to shoot your throat out. But bullets kept spraying around me, sending chunks of headstones in all sorts of directions. Mostly mine, it seemed. I almost made it across Grant Drive, but then the fraggers decided I was too much trouble and decided to go for the big stuff. The whump of a grenade announced just how royally hosed I was. The HE fragger thing. You know, the HE grenade went off just 2 meters from me. But a large headstone took most of the blast, which saved my life. Unfortunately, it sent a nice baseball-sized chunk of concrete right into my dome, just off my left temple. I also felt a couple rounds blast through my abdomen and my right leg. Things got a little crate weird after that. Somehow, I managed to make it to a tree where I completely collapsed. Leaning up against it, bleeding profusely from the head, gut, and watching the rest of the bounty crew advance towards me through swimming vision. I don't remember exactly what they were saying. Something about asking Johnson for double for having their chummers geek. And it broke my heart. But then, it happened. Across the Potomac, seeing that was the moment that President Dunkelson died in that crazy magical explosion. Even all over in Arlington, we all saw it. We all felt it. Goon Squad became sufficiently distracted by the display. I thought it would be a good opportunity to try to make use of their, lack of tactical sense. Never turn your back on an opponent or a quarry, no matter what goes on. Keep focused. Problem was, I tried to raise my manhunter to try to shoot the bastards. And my arm didn't seem to want to work. Blood loss and shock's a bitch. Well, still, despite my inability to help my situation, they were scared. Not quite sure what to do. I was too out of it to know any better. Finally, one of them said, "Just grab the fragger and let Johnson geek him later." Yeah, it was at that point things kind of settled in my brain and I knew I was royally hosed. Then, things got really weird. As two of the goons, an orc and a human, tried to put the habeas gravis on me, the wind picked up. Now, may have been all the shock from blood loss and getting smoked in the head, but there's something really odd, almost unnatural. It didn't seem to bother me, or like I said, I just didn't know any better at the time, but the dwarf leading the party seemed to start panicking. He just kept urging the human and the orc to hurry up and get me so they get out of here. And then, out of nowhere, shots of all things rang out. But here's the thing. It didn't sound like any weapon I knew of, and trust me, I know my firearms. Without warning, the dwarf suddenly screamed and clutched his chest as a red mist sprayed outwards from it. I just looked at him as the ball collapsed to the ground. Chummers just stood there staring. And then all of a sudden, the orc and the human just turned to their left and started shooting frantically, emptying their magazines at some sort of unseen target. And then several figures wearing brown and green fatigues rushed them with bayonets on long rifles. Craziest thing I've ever seen. I had no idea where they came from. Before my eyes could focus, I saw the two fall, screaming in agony and in pure terror, as the forms just seemed to go at them with reckless abandon. By now, I think common sense started to kick in and my heart was threatening to pound out of my chest. And I thought, great, I'm next. My vision started to swim again even more severely and things started going black around the edges. Then, heard of all things, my grandfather. He said in that deep, rock-grinding voice he had, "Don't even think about it, boy. You don't have permission to die. Use your head. Get your kit out. Now! Don't worry. We have your back." Now, I'm not sure what happened after that, but I would swear to my dying day that I felt a shoulder on my hand. And just like that, my vision started to focus back up and my mind snapped to my current situation. And I remembered the trauma patches I kept in my coat. As I slapped them on, I looked up. Grandpa was looking right back at me. But it wasn't as I knew him. He was young, full combat gear, wearing a uniform that hadn't existed in probably over 50 years. I blinked a few times to get some of the remaining dirt out of my eyes, but by the time I got it out, he was gone. The only ones still there were me and the dead goon squad. Now, I don't know how long I was up against that tree from that point either. Eventually, Dock Wagon Squad came to pick me up after my locator beacon went off. Spent the next few hours at the local clinic and local fuzz tried to come by and get some sort of statement out of me what happened, but I think everybody was a little more concerned what happened at Watergate with the explosion. But still, discretion was a better part of valor and I skipped out before they decided to come back. Now, I know this seems kind of crazy, but the Six World is a crazy place. And I've told this story to a few of my other omes. Most of them seem to think it's pure bull trek, some hallucination brought on by shock and trauma. But say what you will about this story, I know what happened. That day seemed like soldiers recognized their own, and they helped me out, my grandfather leading the charge. You know, they say there's no honor among the shadows, and they definitely say that mercenaries have no soul, but sometimes there's a bond between people, and I think that day, it's when I truly learned that soldiers and family look out for their own. I'm going back to Arlington since. Don't really see the need to. I think in that moment, Grandpa told me everything I needed to know at that moment. Rest his soul. And I know someday, if I'm in this similar spot, my chums, my family, if they need me, I'll do just what Grandpa did. I'll come back to the grave with him in tow, and we'll take care of business. And that, my friend, is what I was doing on August 9th, 2057.
Thanks, Chummer. All right, enough macabre madness. Our blubbering is done. There's no crying on Shadow Runs. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix. This is the Anarchy and Podcasting Network. And I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. These are the non-Dunkelzahn-related bits of news of 2057, and there are plenty. In the world of geopolitics, A somewhat sympathetic voice for ghouls begins crying in the wilderness when the Diaries of Tamer Gray are published. Lots of folk begin to understand the difficulty of being infected with a virus that causes you to act in ways you can't control. Like eating your parents. So, scan this. In the Pueblo Corporate Council, Maria Alonso steps down as president, and we are told it is because of health problems. Which is true enough if you consider lead poisoning a health problem. So, behind the scenes, there's this secretive Kachina group called Sayoko, and they were pulling the strings of the board. Carlos Estefan was the chairman of the board and, as it happens, the leader of the Sayoko. Antonio Pope was the protege of Estefan and looked to be the clear choice to succeed Maria Alonso. Yet, when it came time to choose, the council went with the relative unknown Emilio Cajeme as president instead. The smart money is that this whole thing was a setup intended to bring a bad light on Jonathan Pope, who was Antonio Pope's brother. Trying to frame this nasty biz as some kind of sibling rivalry went wrong. If it seems convoluted, it is. But at the end of the day, the rivalry of two brothers left a trail of bullets and bad PR in its wake. 2057 was also the year that brought a record drought to Australia. Now, remember, the mana storms have been frequent down under since the world awakened, and given that no one bothered much to aid them, Sydney had already become a free city. Given that Australia had never really recovered from the drought, and water is as costly as gold, and the mana storms, and the bug spirits that are rampant literally everywhere, and awakened critters which have no acceptable reason to exist, not the least of which is the scary HMHVV-infected koala bears, which crave human flesh and drop out of trees to attack you, affectionately called drop bears, and I can see no reason to ever go to Australia. And sadly, on December 18th, after 6 years of marriage, Princess Caroline of Great Britain decided she found life with Jürgen Myers of Zeta Impchem too boring for her tastes and went back to the single life. Now for the corporation news. Midnight, April 20th, brought a Decker of extreme capability issuing ransom terms to the Big 8 Megas, and they were inclined to listen because he had shut down all their major servers. This security breach of previously unknown proportions was perpetuated by the Decker later nicknamed Leonardo, who left behind a negative portrait of the Mona Lisa. Rumor is that Leonardo is an elf of extreme talent and intellect. Curiously, also in that same year, the Doge of Venice purified the canals and stabilized the city's foundations, preventing them from sinking further into the soil beneath. My little crows in Italy had told me that curiously, earlier in 2057, an elf, who I am told used to go by the name Brightlight, that little tidbit is going to get me on a watch list, crows, changed his name to Leonardo, and approached the Doge, offering to clean the waters before vanishing. You probably saw something like this coming, crows, but near the end of the year, this same Leonardo shows up, selling out to Renraku, and catapults them forward past their cyber competition. And I hesitate to mention this little tidbit, but this Leonardo dolt actually went around in some circles claiming he was actually the Leonardo da Vinci that painted the Mona Lisa. Now, I can say with full confidence that this isn't the case, but probably not for the reason that you'd think. I'll get back to that little conundrum some other time, little crows. The heat on that is too hot, even for me. Sometime later in Seattle, something out of an old comic book happened when Dock Wagon started using vat tissues, which were corrupted, and clients began going crazy and eating each other, a condition labeled the Laughing Death. Thanks to Dunkelzahn's inheritance, Sierra Incorporated got a new chairman, dwarf activist Arthur Vogel. On August 22nd, Damian Knight got granted control of the votes at Gavilan Ventures by Nadia Devar. Later, Wu Xing announced some fairly extensive plans for growth. William Vogel is replaced as CEO of Federated Boeing by Jessica Siriani. And rounding out the corporate musical chairs, we have Shibata Takako taking over as CEO of Shibata Construction and Engineering. Finally, Proteus AG launched its first space mission from Devil's Island. How about some elven news, little crows? Given all the chaos surrounding the death of the great dragon, Shir Terengira decides to put off the third rite of progression until a later date. And because of some absolute wackiness that I will talk about at another time, Shir decides that Crater Lake simply shouldn't have people around it and cordons it off. And for once, I agree with the Shir. And a little magical news thrown in never hurt anyone. Dr. Patterson, a fairly well-known parazoologist, headed into Amazonia for an expedition and is never seen again. except he is. Amazingly, he is rediscovered in 2075 by a former student of his on expedition. Apparently, he was kidnapped but rescued by a forest spirit, who aided him due to his care for nature. He lived there many years and studied creatures and habitats some of us can only dream about. He was instrumental in some of the work on the parazoology uploads a few years back. And, in answer to the question of what lengths people are willing to go to learn, the Atlantean Foundation starts trying to convince the Caribbean League that it's a good idea to dig underneath the water of the Bermuda Triangle. Say hello to the Marrow, folks. Finally, some Shadow World news. In March, a Decker named Rodrigo ends up dead while jacked into the Matrix after an absolutely wince-inducing rant he gave on Shadowland detailing how he screwed Lofvir on some small-time run. Around the date he delivered the details about Dunkelzahn's will, Captain Chaos also uploaded a document called Portfolio of a Dragon to Shadowland BBS, which also contained a section called The Players. This document gives a great deal of information regarding individuals and organizations of particular note that were mentioned in the will of the Great Dragon. In October, Seattle crime bosses from the Biggio and Charniello families start having secret meetings with Sergei Malenkin, who, I'll let you know, represents those elite assassins from Chimera. Chimera hooking up with those guys was bad news. Chimera has roots in the KGB and they don't mess around when they are hired to hit. They want you dead, you are dead, the pay is right. And the pay is 500,000 credits, at least. Unfortunately, they set their sights on a number of decent chummers as a result of those meetings. In particular, a pal of mine, a higher up in the Orc Rights Committee, Joe Twofeathers, took a bullet in the brain when they took their contracts. Crows, I think I've said plenty about this year, but there is infinitely more to share. Perhaps someday I'll talk about Jack Skater and his crew, the explosion of the Sapphire Seahawk off the coast of Sheer Tarangira, and the connection to the Laughing Death, but not today. I'll eventually tell you what I think really happened with Big D, and maybe even give you some insight into that Leonardo fool. But all of that can wait. Take some time to remember President Dunkelzahn in your own way, and I'll take some time as well, because time is something that we can't get back, and it is precious. As you no doubt already know, because you have wasted an entirely good slot of time listening to the Anarchy in Podcasting Network. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanunium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. And I am your host, edging equally evermore within earshot, eloquently endearing erudites everywhere, air eclipsing everyone's evil errors, Opti. Enjoy your freedom. It's just another word for nothing left to lose.